Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Gabrielle Bluestone. Bluestone is a journalist, licensed attorney, and Emmy-nominated producer of the Netflix documentary Fire. Her recent book, Hype, How Scammers, Grifters, and Con Artists Are Taking Over the Internet and Why We're Following, draws from scientific research, marketing campaigns, and exclusive documents and interviews to explain America's thriving scam culture. Let's hear what she has to say about the Fire Festival. Hi, Gabrielle. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
So how were you first introduced to the Fire Festival and how or why did it catch your attention?
Well, I think I was introduced the same way most people were, which was with that viral Instagram campaign and, you know, that fabulous video that made it look like it was going to be the party of the century. And basically, you know, I was intrigued. I saw friends that I knew who had purchased tickets. And I started thinking to myself, you know, am I missing, you know, the event of the year? So I started looking into it. And what I found was when you got off of their Instagram page and actually looked at what they were offering on their website, it was like night and day. You know, they didn't actually have any photos of what it was supposed to look like. It was all these artist renderings. You know, it was very underdeveloped and undercooked. And it really seemed obvious immediately that there was something very off there.
Could you give us a little background on Billy McFarland and, you know, what were some of his earlier ventures and when did he start Fire Media?
Yeah, so Billy McFarland was a, you know, he comes off in the documentary certainly as a bit of an awkward guy, but he was someone who was able to talk anyone into anything. And so he started off in college. He was a freshman at Bucknell and he won a startup competition. And it was for a company that was sort of like a Reddit, Google Hangouts kind of hybrid. And he was able to get, I believe, $30,000 to start that and dropped out of college, launched the site. It never went anywhere, but because he had won this competition, he had this reputation of this, you know, young tech genius who was able, you know, knew what millennials wanted. And so he was able to parlay that into a second company called Magnesis that purported to be sort of like a black card for young 20-somethings. In actuality, it was just he had purchased a bunch of titanium and was able to make cool-looking credit cards for people. And there was supposed to be, you know, a concierge service element to it that quickly fell apart. But because he got good press on that, you know, when he decided to launch Fire Media, he had, you know, New York Post headlines about him and, you know, YouTube videos extolling his virtues as a startup, you know, genius. And so by the time Fire came along, he was able to raise $26 million from investors just based on a string of failures. It was a marketing triumph and a really interesting case study in kind of how that world works.
What was McFarland's vision for Fire Festival?
Great question. It really depends on who you ask and at what point. It initially started, so Fire Media was supposed to be a booking platform for performance artists. So if you wanted to throw a party and book Ja Rule, ostensibly you could go on this app and book a free date that he had and cut out kind of negotiating with agents and that kind of thing. So Fire Festival was initially supposed to be a way to bring attention to the app. And it was supposed to be kind of an industry facing event that would, you know, get the artists and their agents and their, you know, entourages aware of it and into it. But Billy, you know, really wanted to live that kind of rich kids of Instagram lifestyle that you see so prominently on social media. And so it evolved from this kind of small showcase into we're going to buy an island and fly in, you know, the most famous people in the world and have them all watch Blink 182, I guess.
So how involved were Ja Rule and Jerry Media, you know, in the festival and the decision-making process?
Yeah, I mean, Ja Rule was more kind of the celebrity face of it. It's not the most flattering term, but, you know, there's this term useful idiot that's used sometimes. And that's kind of, I think, what his role was. He wasn't as involved in like the finances or I do believe that he wasn't. I mean, he obviously knew that it didn't look like what it was supposed to, but I don't know if he knew how badly Billy McFarland was mishandling things. Jerry Media was brought on as a contractor. They were hired and their fee was paid to spread it on social media. And, you know, of all the people that worked on the festival, they were probably the most effective in the sense that they really got those influencers involved and got the awareness out. You know, the problem was the underlying product was a fraud.
Yeah, and I guess the answer would be Jerry Media, but who was behind the influencer marketing ploy? What was that plan and which influencers were involved? How much did they spend on it? All of that.
Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a combination. Fire, the people that worked at Fire, you know, Billy McFarland and his team were the ones who got, you know, those really famous names involved that you saw in the video. So Bella Hadid, Hailey Bieber, those kinds of people. When Kendall Jenner advertised it, that was all through the Fire guys. And they blew most of their budget on that. I mean, these women have very high fees. And then, you know, posting for social media on top of that, you know, the models were being paid upwards of $100,000 all the way up to $1 million. Kendall Jenner was paid $250,000 just for one post alone. But the orange tile marketing campaign that involved kind of 400 or 500 lesser influencers, that was spearheaded by Jerry Media.
Initially, what were some of the major setbacks for the festival? Had they been dealt with right out of the gate, were they surmountable?
You know, that's like the million-dollar question in all of this. pretty much I'd say their biggest mistake was they would brag about things that they hadn't actually done yet. And then they were locked into these ideas. So Billy told everyone they had purchased a private island that they weren't able to afford or allowed to purchase. So then they were stuck with this. You know, they'd been marketing this to everyone, and anything was going to be lesser. The fact that all they could come up with was a gravel pit next to a sandals resort certainly didn't help. I think there are a lot of opportunities for them to either lessen expectations, be a little more honest with their customers, or take, you know, take the hit. Unfortunately, they couldn't cancel. That was a big part of it, because Billy had not purchased festival insurance, although he told everyone he had. And so, you know, basically they were kind of stuck in this, we have to put this on or we're all going to be personally liable for this. So there was no turning back at that point. You know, had they been able, I personally believe, and this kind of is based on human psychology as well, but I really believe that if some of the more famous influencers had actually shown up, or if the bands had actually performed, or, you know, if it hadn't rained and the mattresses weren't all soggy, I think some of the people that went might have played along. You know, think about when you've been at an event, you know, if you've gone to Coachella, it's fun, but is it as fun as you are portraying it on social media? You know, I think people don't want to necessarily admit that they're not enjoying something or that they got scammed. And so had they done a slightly better job, you know, it might be, you know, Fyre Festival 2 might have happened.
Wow. So what was happening financially behind the scenes? When did he, McFarlane, start running low on cash flow? And what was his backup plan?
Well, almost immediately, they had been chartering private jets and, you know, flying down with models to like scout locations and that kind of thing for months before they even filmed anything. You know, they were really using that money to fund the kind of lifestyle that they wanted to sell their ticket sellers. But by the time it came time for the actual festival, there was no money left to put it on. And so you saw Billy McFarlane doing these increasingly desperate cash grabs. He got actually pretty close with Comcast before they started doing due diligence and saw that it was like a total fraud. But one of the most damning things that he did was just a few weeks before the festival with like no money left, he secured a deal for factored receivables. So he basically got an investment based on money that people would be spending at the festival. So, you know, drinks money, what they were spending on buying tables, that kind of thing. And to secure that, what he did was he abruptly made the festival cashless. So all these people who had already purchased tickets, who, you know, were booked on flights, had no way out, were now being told that they had to preload these RIFD bracelets with a certain minimum amount of money. And it was a disaster because there was no Wi-Fi and there was no way for them to actually scan these bracelets. But the Fyre team needed the money right then and there or the whole thing was going to collapse. So people started loading money onto the bracelets. You know, it was just like one last little stick in the back before it all came crashing down.
And you know, as the clock's running out, the festival's coming up, McFarlane employs a bunch of local contractors to build some sort of semblance of a festival. Did they have any idea what they were getting themselves into?
No, I don't think so. You know, Billy certainly, you know, had his shady moments, but he was someone who had come down to this island and spread a lot of money around on his own. And so I don't necessarily know that they had any indication that he was out of money. Certainly, they had hired, you know, hundreds of locals. Really, they were the ones that got it to where it was. They were moving sand. They were putting all the tents together. They were, you know, anything that you saw in the documentaries or on any of the images that went viral, that was put together by locals. That was not a Fyre production per se. And, you know, they suffered pretty badly, at least initially. No one got paid. Marianne Roll, the woman who ran the restaurant, who's featured in the Netflix documentary, I think paid like upwards of $50,000 of her own money trying to make people whole because she felt a responsibility having helped recruit people in. There was a GoFundMe after the documentaries came out that I think went towards paying a lot of the people back. But I remember reading, there was a story in a local Bahamas paper about someone who had, you know, spent a month working on it, who their electricity was cut off. Like they weren't able to pay anything in their home. Like people were really financially affected on all levels, you know, investors who lost their retirement savings down to the locals who didn't have lights for a month.
Once the festival date arrives, when do attendees start to sense that things are not what they had been promised?
Yeah, so it actually took a minute because the fire team was smart enough to send them initially to this restaurant that was very picturesque and kind of exactly what you would imagine when you say, I'm going on a luxurious Bahamas vacation, right? It was a beachfront bar with, you know, a beautiful surrounding and a swing in the ocean. And so the first few buses and planes of people went there. And it was only until, you know, a few hours in that they're like, they're pouring tequila in our mouths and we still have no idea where our luggage is or where we're staying, that people started to realize something was amiss. And at a certain point, you know, the fire team had to take them to the lodging, you know, and I use that word liberally if you've seen what it looked like. And there's a very famous scene in the documentary where people on the bus start to pull in and you can hear the shock and disbelief in their voice. Like, this is what we're doing. This is where we're staying. So as soon as people saw it, it just fell apart.
When does he call it quits? And when does when do people start wrapping up the festival?
Yeah, I've forgotten the exact timeline now at this point, but I believe it wasn't until the next day. So they had all these people there staying there overnight, and the fire team was working overtime trying to keep it going. And there were people that were trying to help the concert goers, but the brain trust, you know, like the executive leaders, their focus was on the media and on trying to convince people back in the States that everything was going okay. So they were working the phones, giving interviews to everyone, really trying to keep it going. And the funniest part of all of it to me is even when they finally canceled it the next day and promised to get everyone out and eventually did get everyone off the island, they were already pitching Fyre Festival 2. They were telling people, we can either give you an immediate refund or we'll give you 3 VIP tickets to next year's Fyre Festival. It really was kind of incredible.
Now, looking back, are there any, or I guess now in the present, are there any kind of laws or restrictions set in place to prevent something like this from happening again?
You know, it's, the onus, unfortunately, is really on the consumer. And the fact that I find really interesting is even, you know, Billy McFarland was charged, Elizabeth Holmes was charged. People that pull off scams like this do end up facing legal recourse, but it's usually not for defrauding the customer. It's for defrauding the investor. So even the protections that exist are not for the little people, are not for the people who actually got stuck on the island. So there were, I think, class actions. I don't know the status of them now. One of the attendees opted not to do a class action and won, you know, a $5 million judgment that I would love to see how they figure out how to collect that. But there really isn't a lot of protection or a way to stop that. And even with false advertising on Instagram, which is like the most basic thing, there's like no governmental kind of recourse for that. They'll occasionally send, you know, a strongly worded letter to companies that are employing influencers without identifying them as ads, but the influencers themselves don't get in trouble. Like no one really, there's no reason for people to stop because there really doesn't exist a legal framework that protects people effectively right now.
What are the odds that Billy McFarland will do something like this in the future?
Oh my God, 100%. The craziest detail about all of this to me is, you know, he got arrested and he was facing federal charges and he was out on bail for the Fyre Festival and he launched a second felony scam targeting the original victims of Fyre. He had created a new company called New York City VIP Access and he hired someone to be the face of it. And they started targeting their email lists with fake offers to, you know, other cool events that someone who went to Fyre Festival might want. So they were offering fake tickets to the Grammys and, you know, fake tickets to the Victoria's Secret fashion show and promising Met Gala seats. Like it was unreal. The chutzpah of it all, if you will. So I have no doubt that he will be back with something bigger than ever.
So at the end of the day, if you had to pick one person or thing, it could be a concept that you think is to blame for the Fyre Festival. who or what would that be?
You know, I don't say this to plug my own book, but it is the hype, you know, and that is something that we see across industries, whether it is in the startup world, on social media, you know, even in like everyday business, like the idea that things are overhyped and the fact that we as consumers are buying into the hype without questioning it, I think is the most kind of like threatening element of it all. And if nothing else, I hope people come away from this a little more cynical, like a little cynicism really never hurts.
Gabrielle, thank you so much for talking to us today. It's been very insightful.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. Love to talk scams anytime.
We'll have you back for sure.
Great.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With us today, we have producer Clayton Early.
Hello.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
Hi.
How about all that juicy, juicy info, huh?
You dripping with juice.
No, I mean it's but she was incredible, great guest. I really brought up a couple of things for me. One early thing she said was that the millennial, like, I think the way this guy got into investors was he was like, I get the millennial. And she, you know, that to me, I feel like is like something you get a bunch of old people with money or yep. people who deal with money all the time. They don't know what's going on. If some guy in cool pants comes in the room and he's like, hey, I know what the young guys want, then if it's convincing enough, then the investors are going to go with it. And yes. that's basically this guy's whole secret sauce.
And he won like a competition in school. So yes. they're like, yeah.
That's something we didn't talk about.
Right.
But
we kind of talked about it, the mystique and...
Yeah, but I just mean the validity that that competition would have given someone like him.
Right.
You know, especially in that circle of I'm young and I know what the younger people want. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a child
old,
genius.
I'm an old, I want someone with credentials who can prove to me that they know the market that I'm trying to make money on. And you look young and hip and you seem to have had this experience in your past that... proves that you know more than me, so I'm just going to give you all of my money and faith blindly. Basically,
yes, totally.
He really knew how to tap into that.
Yeah,
and I guess that's hype too. Harkening back to what Gabrielle said,
which
is
we
like
didn't even there's mention. Hype.
Yeah, from the beginning to the very end of this thing, there's a lot of selling. You're just selling, like, oh yeah, I can do this. I got this. This is this vision. I know all about it.
Hype kind of underpins the whole thing. I'm interested to read her book because, or at least just understand what her, how she defines hype and how she sees how it works. I think it's a really, really interesting subject. I also just want to say something else that like lit a light bulb over my head was that she was like, when you asked her about when did things go really bad or whatever, she was like, well, you know what? She was like, there was a moment in the festival where it was like, it kind of could have been pulled off. Like if enough bands played and if it didn't rain, then suddenly, and then it made me think, oh yeah, like music festivals are a shitty experience. But if you're like a person who likes that kind of shitty experience, then you like that. So who's to say you're not getting the product you paid for? So you know what I'm saying? It's just
if it's
weird.
Raining at Woodstock and you want to jump in the mud and roll around, then you're having a great time
That's
at Woodstock.
Right.
If it's if you're not a person who likes mud, then you're not having a good time at Woodstock.
Right, but you know, and not to downplay people's love for music festivals, but you know, maybe we're not music lovers, but I see the appeal in a certain way. It's not for me, but I see the appeal. That said, I feel like music festivals are always a potential victim of getting like for scam artists. Like they're a potential vehicle for scam artists, you know, because it's not the first time, right?
Yes, but I think what's unique about this one is previous music festivals really focus on the music. I feel like the focus on this was the lifestyle more than it was like come and listen to Blink-182 or whatever. It's like, yeah, we have some big artists, but like, you're not really here for the music. You're here for the crowd and the ambiance and like the poshness of it all.
Yeah, there's something to that for sure. It's interesting. I mean, I'm not a music festival person, but you know, look, if you get a band to play and they're playing 40 minutes and then another band comes right on, like there's an appeal to that. It's like, you know, you're getting a bang for your buck. And it was like Marta was saying during the podcast, like he was close to kind of pulling it off. I mean, if he got a couple of these bands to play, who's to say you didn't kind of get what you paid for? You're in the Bahamas.
Well, Gabrielle mentioned that. And you know, talking about Coachella too, which we have been to Coachella and it was not it was not...
I remember when you guys went to that back in the day. You guys went to early Coachella, right? Yeah.
It was not for us, but people were having a fucking great time.
I was looking around and I was like, everyone's having a ball. Why can't I be this person? But that's just on me. We can get in on, you know, that's just, I can spiral, you know, all day long, you know, from the second I got in a line to get on a bus. You know what I mean?
We don't like to wait in line.
No.
But the other thing I want to
Well, Gabrielle was saying, you know, they took them first to like this beautiful restaurant. You know, it was like first stop, beautiful restaurant.
Guys, I just have to say, like listening to her explain that made me think of you guys because Clayton and Rebecca Alarmi, they used to plan our Harvard sailing team, our old sketch comedy group. They used to plan our vacations, right? And they were in charge.
Vacations. They were great. It's great that you think it was a vacation. It was a literal work trip.
That means we did a good job. We did a great job.
Exactly.
I can't believe you called it a vacation.
They used to plan our shows that we would play at, let's say, colleges or
out of town work.
So, but they would take care of all of the logistics. And it just made me like there would be time that was allocated for sound check. There was time allocated for run throughs. We had time to check in. We had time to travel, and it was all accounted for by them. And so thank you guys for doing that. But to me, like just the idea that he just was like, all right, send everybody to the restaurant for now. And they had no like real hard and fast logistics planned out for what happened afterwards, just sent like a rough shiver down my spine that like he's just scrambling to grab money and he's got no logistics worked out. So I thought we could have put up lack of logistics or
oh my God.
No respect for logistics.
I was thinking about her talking about just all of that, how they were using the money that should have been used for this to just like, you know, kind of bankroll the lifestyle that they were trying to sell while they were planning the festival. And I was like, to me, I kept thinking like, this is like a family who decides to take a vacation, but like the 5-year-old gets the checkbook and he gets to plan everything. And it's like, he's of course going to order like extra ice cream and like video games, but like he hasn't thought about bathroom breaks and where they're going to sleep when they get to Disneyland and how they're getting to Disneyland from the airport. You know, it's like all a mess.
Oh, that is the perfect analogy. That is amazing. I also want to shout out to something else that Gabrielle mentioned, which is the RFID bracelets. Mm-hmm. My dad runs a company that sells RFID scanners and software. Mm-hmm. And it would be so funny to him that they sold the bracelets and they had no scanners.
Should be a package deal.
And it has to go with Wi-Fi. I mean,
and there's no Wi-Fi. There's no Wi-Fi.
A scanner and you take away Wi-Fi from an RFID bracelet, and that's just a piece of plastic.
A beam, with a radio frequency.
I don't know what that is.
It's just a fundamental misunderstanding of how these things work.
I was curious about when she said that there was no festival insurance.
Oh,
and
my
they
God.
They were all personally liable, which is like a huge, scary
now
red flag.
That I was wondering, shivers down my spine. Yes.
Is that even was that possible because they were in Exuma? Like, you can't throw a festival in the U.S. without having insurance would be my guess, but maybe I'm just...
Good question.
I wonder if... what are the checks and balances behind that? It seemed like he needed to... The festival had to go through... They had to go through with the festival. Otherwise, he knew they were screwed.
Right, but my point is, I don't think you can even start to organize a festival.
It depends on the state.
That's interesting. I would have to fact check that, and I'd send that to one of the guys or gals on my team to get that situated. I don't usually do a lot of fact checking during the.
No. It's true. I don't mean to put you on the spot,
but I can look into that. But it's interesting because you wonder if that was a reason why some of these performers just were like, "We can't do this. You don't have any insurance. Like, who's liable here? Like, what if something goes wrong?
Yeah. I mean."
Well, what if somebody steals our guitar, our instruments, whatever?
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't put it past him to just lie about it and make up, you know, come up with some fake documents. Yeah. I mean, he lied about everything else. And he lied about funds, you know, for his own company, how much, you know, how profitable it was. So what makes you think that he couldn't just like dock up, you know, get some documents and put a label on it,
but like,
and say it's insurance.
I mean, you guys tell me, because did this not give you nightmares of like listening to her explain how he's scrambling from like money to money and just putting out these fires, no pun intended, throughout this, like as these people are arriving? Did that not, just thinking about somebody who would live like that?
We're specific people. Like for us, I know, of course, like, that's going to induce anxiety. But I can't even understand intellectually how you could exist day to day, knowing you're that steeped in debt and like behind in every sense of the way.
Music festivals are not for us, and this kind of lifestyle is just not for us.
It's true.
You know, scramble lifestyle. I just want to point out that I loved Gabrielle's conclusion to all of this, which was, you know, the hype essentially, and speaking directly to the consumer and being like, you have to be more cynical.
Mm.
And yes, we did talk about this too, how there, like on the episode, how there doesn't seem to be a lot of protection for consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was so, and like, it is fascinating to hear like, oh, well, there's only, you know, it was for defrauding investors, like, you know, these poor investors who are pouring all of their millions of monies to make more monies who are right. being defrauded, but not the people who are just straight up losing mm-hmm. their money, or the workers who are straight up losing their money. And, you know, kudos to that GoFundMe campaign for happening to at least reimburse some of it. But it just seems like if we know that the people, the government, whatever you want to call it, doesn't have our back, then I agree with her. We have to be much more skeptical and discerning mm-hmm. and about everything we look at.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the internet is just an easy place to get lied to mm-hmm. because you don't have to see, you're not at the store. You're not looking at whatever you're purchasing, like right in your hand. Mm. You're not feeling its texture. It's just like a photo of
right.
something. You know, and you're just yes. send your funds. I promise it'll get to your house at some point. Oh, yeah. Give me your address. Like, what?
I really appreciated what she said at the very top of the interview, Gabrielle, when she said, you know, I was pulled in by this beautiful video and then I went right to the website and it would quickly. She said it was so undercooked. You know, how it was right. like, oh, there's no images here. They're all renderings. Like, that should be your first sign that you're like, mm-hmm. wait a minute. Like, if you're selling me something and you don't have actual pictures on like a picture format space. That's what the internet is. You're looking at images, right?
Yeah. Like, there were no photos. You know what? You know, speaking of photos and being cynical, I live in and breathe by these, you know,
principles.
No. Well, yes, by those principles, but also by other customer photos.
Oh, yeah.
Of items. That's yes. the first thing I look yeah. at. You know,
TripAdvisor.
Anytime I'm going to a hotel or anytime I'm purchasing anything online, I don't want to see your photos. You know,
it's without the good lighting. It's yes, like the real lighting. It's the real. It's not staged.
Their clothes are kind of strewn on the.
Yeah,
bed.
Someone's like dirty laundry's on the side and toothbrushes already on the. That's what I want to see. That's what I want to see.
So the consumers are getting smarter, guys. We need to be smarter. We need to be more cynical. Take more pictures.
No one's taking care of us.
Did you feel like she changed your mind on our verdict?
So, Clayton, remind us of what we ended up sending to the alarmist jail and what we ended up slapping.
We threw classism in jail.
Oof, that's not
which
jiving.
Was. Well, hear me out, though.
Okay.
I think classism, there's a direct correlation with hype, I think you could say, because hype is upselling something, right? Mm-hmm. It's about something being perhaps better than it actually is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So classism is all about like the elite, like we are better than. Mm-hmm. So I could see a similarity between, you know, selling hype and people who are after the hype
right.
being classist.
Yeah.
We slapped serial fraudster Billy McFarland.
Right. Which is fair.
Right.
Okay. I guess based on your based on that, your kind of logic behind that, I guess you're right.
Well, here's devil's advocate. Let me just play the devil's advocate to myself. Are we blaming the consumers who are chasing that?
You need to be more cynical.
Classism, you know, like if we say classism, is that blaming the consumer who is aspiring to that lifestyle?
Mm.
It's also blaming. Well, it's also telling. It's like reminding us that like there are people out to get us. Essentially, they're going to use that against mm-hmm. us.
But I think
right,
yeah. The specific. It's almost like the. The sort of underpinning throughout was this classism, right? Because classism showed up in so much of, you know, the Instagram people yeah. posting, you know, all the levels of what you could do at the festival, and also this guy and what he personified, Billy. So mm-hmm. I think that, you know, it's interesting, but is hype the specific tool from, let's say, the toolbox that is
right.
classism? Is hype the specific tool that made the Fyre Festival such a disaster, is maybe the question.
I think classism is the underlying problem and hype was the tool used to get away with it.
Yeah.
So I mean, perhaps we do change it to hype.
There's so many ways to kind of like frame this. It's such a, that's what makes it so fascinating here is that like,
so many lessons in this play, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So do you think we should change it to hype? I think I got to.
Okay.
Because I still think it still references classism. That's why I like it.
Okay. But it's a little bit more direct.
No, let's keep classism.
Okay.
Yeah. And let's just, I think we should probably slap hype as well as Billy McFarland.
Okay, we can do that.
Because it was the tool. Okay. All right. So I'll call that hype. Look out. You're getting the big slap. Now, thanks again to Gabrielle for sharing her expertise with us. And I just, before we go, I got to ask our listeners to go on our page on Apple Podcasts and give us a rate, review, subscribe. You know, I don't think we have gotten any reviews or any ratings in the last, you know, in a bit. And that the only way we're going to be able to continue to make all of these episodes is through your support in that way. I guess creating hype.
Right.
Think of this as like, are we asking our listeners for hype?
I think we're asking that. Yeah. Go ahead, Clayton.
Think of this as like, this is the spring, fall, whatever drive for like your local NPR station. It's like, you know, this is free content that we are providing for you and we are doing our best to provide it. And all we ask is that, you know, maybe this is the time where you have a few minutes to make that review. And we would be so grateful for that. And it, you know, it all helps in the greater effort of bringing you these events so that we can all live and learn and not make these mistakes in our future.
And let me tell you something, guys, if we get enough reviews, if we get enough likes online, maybe we'll get big enough that we'll be able to put together a little Alarmicon because maybe we get it. Maybe we get, we get an island. Maybe
this is your favorite disaster. Terrible. Don't do that.
We could have it at a convention center or a little island
Clayton
somewhere.
Clayton will plan it.
We'll sell wristbands with RFID.
Trust me, you want to be invited to this if Clayton's planning it.
Right. We're going to have to really hype up this event, right?
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll get all of our hundreds of followers too.
Mm-hmm. We'll pay
an alarmy, it's a visual of an alarm on their social media. And it's just going to link you to Alarmicon.
There you go. And there's nothing stopping us. And it's up to you to basically figure out if you would have fun at this thing or not.
No. I bet you Billy McFarland could really sell this idea to millennials.
I bet so.
God.
Once he gets out of jail.
No. Okay. No, we're not doing that. But seriously, we really appreciate all of your support and could use it. Well, thank you, everyone. And thank you, Clayton. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Gabrielle. And tune in next week because we are going to be discussing the death of Owen Hart.
Earios.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.